Welcome, friends, to the Catholic Blood Podcast. Today, I'm going to be introducing one of my friends. The interview will last about an hour long. It's going to be pretty much an introductory to who he is. But towards the end, we do talk about Advent and like some good ways. Excuse me, not Advent. We're talking about Lent. And we're talking about different ways that we can approach Lent and different things that have helped us out. So I hope you enjoy the interview. If you do not like banter and you're watching this on YouTube or an audio podcast host that does have chapter notes? I will be dividing this into different chapters, so please feel free to skip ahead to the end. But without further ado, welcome, and I hope you enjoy. So, welcome again to the Catholic Blood Podcast. I have a friend with me today. If you'd like to introduce yourself.
Yeah, name's Brother Philip Neri. Just really excited to be here. It's been a long time coming. We've talked about this quite a bit, and seems like we were finally able to fit into our busy schedules.
Yeah. So just a reminder for those tuning into the podcast, we have some autonomy going on here. So I'm taking the pseudonym Brother John Chrysostom, but that's really long. So it'll probably just be like Brother Chrysostom. We're not religious. It just kind of flows well. Plus, we're pretty close friends, so we call each other brother all the time. Well, usually we might use, you know, our real names, but for our autonomy, we're not. So, yeah, Brother Philip Neri is not actually Philip Neri. Or is he the Saint Philip Neri? So just for clarification.
Yeah, that's a lot to live up to. I don't know if the saint title's applicable just yet. So
yeah, man. So how about for everybody, you can introduce yourself a little bit. Tell us like some things you like to do, like a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I'm gonna say I'm probably maybe the biggest outdoor geek that there is. A lot of hiking, hunting, fishing, any kind of outdoor activity that you could think of, I've probably engaged in it. Really just stay busy with work. Unfortunately, I don't get to work for the church, but do what I can, just trying to serve at my local parish as an altar server and also just helping out around. Other than that, just staying busy with life. Seems like there's always more to do.
Yeah. Well, Brother Philip, how a little bit more to that to you. You have a degree from college as I know it, right?
Yeah, a degree in wildlife biology. It's kind of odd that I'm actually a wildlife biologist by trade because I feed chickens as an occupation. So I actually run a feed mill for a pretty large scale company. And yeah, the days are spent running left and right. And when I get home, I try to fit in a little bit of time for prayer and just, you know, gaining a little bit of spirituality every day. And some days are better than others, obviously, with everyone. But there's always that opportunity to grow, always that opportunity to be a little bit better.
Yeah. So yeah, I think it's fair to say that you run like a chicken with its head cut off during work.
Yes, that's kind of accurate to say that. Actually, yes, I do run like a chicken with my head cut off. But, it's nice because, especially being kind of a managerial role, there is a little bit more freedom for projects and really just to kind of take the role or the initiative at work to kind of make it better. So it's nice. It's always like a it's like a labor of love, you know. It's a what can we do to be better? And it's crazy how often, even though working in secular society, you know, especially as a feed mill manager, how much I relate that back to my spirituality. It's always this constant growth process. I always tell the guys, you know, I have this little graph that I show every new guy that comes through the doors, and one thing that I show them is, you know, on our x-axis, we have productivity. On our y-axis, we have efficiency. And I always tell them our goal is to always be making this, you know, a growth curve up. And the more productivity we have, the more efficiency we have, just the better it gets. And the more we slack off, well, obviously it falls off pretty fast. So I relate that to our spirituality a lot, not because we have to be productive, not that we have to be efficient, but it's the growth process. It's like if you're not growing, you're kind of staggering and you're becoming lukewarm. So that's some things that I'm often thinking about, like, oh, yeah, okay, how can we make the feet feel better? But how can I grow in my spirituality? So it's a nice little correlation that kind of gets met right there. So,
right. So you are not selling yourself to your fullest potential. There are some pretty cool things about you, sir, that you've completely left out of this conversation.
Yeah. Well, I know, but at the same time, I'm also trying to. Honestly, I feel like God's the coolest. So it's always
true.
Okay. Yeah. Let's lift him up. Yeah, okay. I do some cool stuff. I mean, I think everybody does cool stuff. I don't think I'm special, you know?
Okay. All right. So for those of you who don't know Brother Philip Neary, if he's not going to like tout God's gifts that he's given through him, I will. He is also a master falconer and was once upon a time professional rodeo clown.
Yep. I've done both of those. Exciting experiences. Yeah, you know, I guess while we've already mentioned it, I'm kind of an adrenaline junkie. So obviously the more adrenaline that gets pumped into my activities, the better. It's probably why I'm such a big hunting nerd. And I like to probably hunt so much. I think that's like the best adrenaline rush you can get. Not only that, but you get to be outside. So yeah, you know, falconry kind of mixed right into that. Being a rodeo clown, obviously definitely mixed into that as well. So yeah, you know, I mean, I think just trying to make life exciting. You know, it's not that I really don't think, obviously, this is just a pilgrimage, but I never said we couldn't have fun while we were here, you know, at least in a good, wholesome way. So like falconry and rodeo clowning. Yeah, that's a wholesome way to engage in what God's given you. So.
Yes. And also for those of you who don't know, since he continues to sell himself short and will not put forth his gifts that God has given him, Brother Philip Nee over here is also one of the fastest readers and consumers of just highfalutin books. Why don't you list some of the stuff you read, man? I can't keep your pace. I've tried.
You know, I don't think I'm that good of a reader. I feel pretty slow, but I'm going to say, some of the, you know, I've read quite a few, like Thomas Aquinas's works. I mean, he's like just, he's a giant in, you know, in Catholicism. And him, I've really kind of been interested, especially recently, in St. Anselm of Canterbury. He's kind of like an interesting story, but also at the same time, his works that he engages in, I really like, obviously a theory, but the, you know, satisfaction of atonement theory that he's created, all those things. Just like, it's great to see people who are smarter than you engage with God on this incredible level of intellect, and just being able to read a little bit about him, I feel like I can not like tote myself up like, oh yeah, wow, like look at this that I know, but also at the same time it's like, wow, yeah, I would have never thought about that. I would have never had that perspective about my life. I feel like some of the more important readers are actually most of the religious. You know, everybody knows St. John of the Cross, St. Catherine of Siena. So many of them have just these, even though a lot of them spent their life in a convent or in an abbey or a monastery, wow, what would it have been like just to have a conversation with these people while you're picking weeds in the garden? I mean, that's probably awesome, you know? So, yeah, just engaging with them, just taking the mindset of the saints, all those things, great.
Yeah, you've also read some pretty, like, well-known non-Christian Catholic books, like, correct me if I'm wrong, Marcus Aurelius's Meditations?
Yes, Marcus Aurelius, it was good. I obviously had a very hard time whenever he would start getting into his pagan gods, but it was easy to wrap in a lot of the Stoic mindset to Catholicism. Not because Catholicism branches from Stoicism, but it's crazy how the secular world comes up with these things that the church has already had in place since, obviously, since the apostles were around. So it's almost like this transient copying, you know, but obviously we can put ourselves as the original. Yeah, Marcus Aurelius, very good. Actually, there are quite a few Protestant writers that actually have some very good mindsets. Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Actually, I've got the book. Let me see. Actually, yeah, there we go. The Cost of Discipleship. I had it right there on the bookshelf. This thing is great. He's, you know, and obviously in the church sense, he would be considered a martyr during Nazi Germany, but he just like sums it all up. He said to live for Christ, or to die for Christ is to live for gain. It's like, wow, you know. So I like, you and I made this comment a long time ago. For all the listeners out there, Brother Chris and I have actually known each other for, what we say, 6+ years now?
About right, yeah.
Only on 6 years? Yeah, so yeah. Quite a long time. We've had quite a few spiritual discussions, quite a few in-depth analysis of ourselves. And you made a comment a long time ago, quite a few years ago, and it stuck with me. I think I've quoted the comment probably 20 times to different people, that the church is just this sea of knowledge, and heaven is just this infinite pool of knowledge. And so just being able to have just a sea of knowledge, there's so much more. Obviously, you can get the basics of it. It's like, obviously, yes, Christ is King. He's our salvation. But there is so much more to God that you can engage in and discover, just like a lot of the saints have. So I think that's just a really aspect, a cool aspect of Catholicism, where it's like,
I think I remember this, actually. So when we were in college, we did not know the meaning of sleep, and we would frequently find ourselves in the parking lot 1 o'clock in the morning, not doing drugs, but like coming out of like adoration or something like that. And be like, oh, you're going in. It's 24-hour adoration night, man. Just coming out. And we're crazy. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that during this conversation, you're like, ah, I'm just so angry because I just want to read all the books and have all the knowledge. And I know that in this lifetime, I won't be able to do that.
That's it. That was me. Yes. I still have that frustration some days where I'm like, man, I just can't read enough, right?
And then, meanwhile, I'm on the other hand, like, man, I'm just so happy I'll never be bored. Like, there'll always be something to read.
Yeah, I mean, I think just that personality is, mine's, you know, I think there's a lot of impatience there. And it's sometimes, I think it's to the detriment, maybe, of to my sleep schedule as well. And I'm like, yeah, this book. Only like 100 pages left. Might as well finish it. So,
yeah. So,
I think a healthy balance comes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, a little bit more about you, man. Like, yeah, you also know the struggles of RV life or just trailer life, you know?
Yeah. You know, living in a camper, it has some perks to it. I really like how it takes me like 5 minutes to dust my whole house.
That is nice, actually. Yeah.
About 3 minutes to sweep, and, you know, the counter is like not even like a quarter of a square foot. So it's like, you know, you can get it cleaned up pretty fast. I think I like that aspect of it. I think the struggle I have is, obviously, I'm a big reader. So, I only have so much space for books.
Yeah,
it's bad because I thought about renting a storage unit and having bookshelves in it. And it's like, you know, get a climate controlled storage unit, and it just be
my gosh,
you walk in and it's just me lying down with bookshelves.
So I can just what I'm imagining right now is like you just walk in there and like it's just, you know, a normal storage unit. And then you open it up and just like this dark oak paneling for your books and your library, carpeting, going on a couch, a place to put your cigars.
Pretty much, yeah. It's like, yeah. That's my little.
There's a little three-piece suit waiting for you in there so you can look the part as you're reading these books.
Yeah, of course. I think, you know, other than just like the downsides, there hasn't been so many downsides for me. Really, I like the aspect of being able to just put the key in it, lock it, and being able to go travel. And it's like there's, I can see why the tiny house movement is so big, because it's easy to just step away from your house because it's so small. And it seems like maintaining the house doesn't take your life. You know, like my parents all the time had to be making repairs on their home, just constantly investing in their house just to keep it up. They didn't have a bad house. It was actually really nice. But really, like, the whole process, I think, is nice because it's like it takes you away from having to just constantly be like maintaining your abode and also like trying to acquire stuff. Like, you can only get so much stuff in the camper and then it's full.
Yeah.
You have to therefore keep downsizing. You're like always like, well, I have this, so then why do I need that? So I'm always constantly like consolidating my items. I'm not a minimalist. It's like way too secular. Actually, you might remember Mr. V. Yeah, Mr. V, he definitely, you know, him and I were like working on that minimalist mentality, but then we realized like how secular it actually was, and we were like, yeah, we're not doing it to be like more in the world. We're doing it because obviously, materialism can definitely take you away from your spirituality. So the camper life is like, you know, tiny house, big living.
Yeah, I have to say, though, I haven't had a similar experience, as you well know. I had a leak.
Yeah.
It became a frozen waterfall. So then I came back to that. And I had, like, rip out carpet, put down new carpet. Or actually, I didn't put down new carpet. I put down wood floors. They actually looked nice. But then I had a cut trimming. And then I was borrowing tools from a friend, and they were metal trims. I couldn't use the vibrator saw, so I was just using a handsaw. And like, man, it's been grueling. I'm still working on it. I just made the final cuts for the final pieces of trimming, and I've yet to like glue them together and put them down. But yeah, so I have had a lot of work on the RV. Plus, I've had like AC units. Plus, I've had water heater issues. So 20-year-old RVs can be problematic, but I do like what you say when you talk about like the minimalistic like aspect of owning a camper. It's like, hey, there's only so much room. So nowadays, like, I used to just like, oh, that's useful, I'll get it. But now I'm just like, how many times am I going to use this? How versatile is this thing that I'm going to buy? Is this a single product use thing? Because if it is, it ain't coming in.
It can't. Like, you can't have every kitchen gadget. I'm a big, I like to cook. I like to cook because I like to eat. And the biggest aspect of it is, you know, the kitchen with all the gadgets, the lemon squeezers and the blender and all. Like, I'm just back to the old days of a knife and a cutting board and three pots, and it's pretty nice. So, you know, I did upgrade. I needed more than two pots, because sometimes I like to try to cook a little bit more than like one side. So I actually invested in I got a few little pieces of appliance now, but other than that, yeah, it's always, how many times can I use this? I even went so far as back when I was actually living at home before I moved into the camper and moved away, you know, I had so many clothes. Now, you know, I only wear a set amount of jackets. So I took all the other jackets, put them in a bag. And then, so actually where I go to mass at, the parish is in the downtown area of town. So there's quite a lot of homeless there. So I have this bag of jackets in the back seat of my truck that just always is there. So if I see a guy, I don't really carry cash on me, and so I really don't ever have cash to give. But if it's cold outside, I'm like, want a jacket? Like another jacket? And so I've been giving jackets away. So instead of like donating them to like the local, you know, place that they can go buy and they have to like spend money, I want to give them away. And so like whenever I see that, I feel like it gives a direct impact to those people. It's like,
yes, man,
you can do those type of things.
Yeah. I was actually talking about this not too long ago where it's just like, you know, we have a shared experience of homeless ministry. So for me, at first, it was really uncomfortable to approach these people that didn't have a home and just didn't look the same as me, probably smelled most of the time. And I say probably, like, they're definitely people who did smell quite a bit. And one thing it taught us was that human interaction, how important the human interaction is on top of the, like, the material things. Like, the first thing is people would always say, it's just like, thank you for talking with me. You made my day. It's a good day now because you talked to me. And they're like grateful for the stuff we gave them, but that wasn't the thing. That wasn't the thing that was like really important to them. Like, I was just talking about like, yeah, I really don't like kind of the faith we're being handed on to us. Because like, I don't know if you're like me, but my faith is very much so, like, I'm very grateful or what I received because it was good, but that apostolic living is just not something that was present in our culture, where it's just like, yeah, we live as Catholics, which means we follow these rules. And like, my parents did a wonderful job, so I'm very grateful for that. But when you look at the church, it's like, it's more than rules. So I can see why like some people are falling away. It's because like in like your life and your upbringing, my parents actually did a pretty good job of this. So I can't complain, and I'm not complaining, but being able to see the person that you're helping, being able to be there for them and having that human interaction, having that apostolic lifestyle, it's like, well, what did the apostles do? They said, well, if you have, what did Jesus say? You have two tunics, like keep one, give the other one to the poor. Like that ability of just like not just being a part of your local Catholic church, but actually being an apostolic church, which is what we started out with, and like having this outreach and ministry. So like, I'm happy that like my parents, I mean, doing a couple really, really cool things. Like we went to Mexico once and we did some charity work over there, and then also volunteer work. But I don't like most volunteer work, because it's so removed. It's like, you know, the upper class and middle class doing this stuff to help out the poor, but they never interact with them. It's just like, yeah, we give them money, we help raise the money, and it's good. But like you said, like, you didn't just donate, right?
Yeah. You know, I'm with you. Like, it's there. And it's really crazy that you kind of think about the human interaction, because, you know, it's always, I think, the biggest crime to the aspect of what we do to the homeless is that they're almost like treated like subhuman, because it's like, oh, you're homeless, you're dirty, you don't smell good, you might have some sort of mental deficiency, and that's none of their fault. And a lot of people, so when they see them, they're like, oh, homeless people, or they're just like, yeah, take my money and get out of my way. And it's almost like, you know, they're people too, and they're beautiful souls. If you'll just sit down and have a conversation with them, the things you can learn, the things you can, like the love that you can give to your brother by just listening or talking. You know, we talk and have conversations every day, just conversational, and especially us, but they don't receive that in the same levels that we do, because obviously it's because just like that, almost like the discrimination against them. So I think it's awesome, because it's like, even though, and this isn't to build myself up as like, oh yeah, hey, I'm a, you know, good treater of the homeless, or do what you can, but just the aspect of, you have a piece to start that conversation. Hey man, it's cold outside. Here's a jacket. What's your name? You know, how can I pray for you? you know, what's going on with your life? Who are you? Tell me your story. It's like everybody has a story. And to be able to share that story as important, man, like, it's beautiful. It's beautiful to hear someone be able to give and share their life. Because, you know, it's kind of like it's that memento mori mentality of, you know, you remember that you must die. Like, and all the things that you acquire, you know, those don't matter. You know, it's like, wow, okay, when you leave a legacy, like, I'm sorry, nobody cares about the jackets that you leave behind for your kids to wear. They're going to throw them away anyway. But the aspect of saying that you were a person who engaged with those who needed you, the person who reached out and showed love, like, that is what Christ calls us to every time. It's always this aspect of, here's where I'm comfortable, here's where I'm not comfortable, and where I'm not comfortable is where I'm. So, let's go.
Yeah. So I have to apologize. I laughed when you said, like, some of them may have mental disorders. It's because I'm a very prideful, fallen person. And one time when we were doing one of these ministries, I don't know if you were there, but I actually...
You told me this story, but no, I wasn't there that time.
So you already know what I'm going to get into. Yeah, so I was just I want to be right, and I want to be intelligent. So I started talking to this homeless guy, and he developed this entire philosophy, and it was like, that this is what he was living by. He had some sort of mental illness. Very smart guy, and he was like, he read a lot of books and was very intelligent, because actually something that's really interesting is homeless people like to typically read at the library, and so so this guy was very intelligent, but his philosophy obviously had like this major flaw in it. He was like, you know, positive things are more correct because they have twice the affirmation as a negative thing, and negative thing can only have one negative. And like, we're getting into it, I'm talking, and I'm like, I bring up these proofs that are pretty, I thought were pretty good at the time. And I was luckily with two other people from our ministry. And then it ended with me pretty much just like getting really excited, almost yelling. Maybe some people would call it yelling, but I'm not yelling at him. I'm just like trying to like prove my point. Like, no, this is why it is. And... and one of the guys is like comedy's like, okay, yeah, cool. Let's just bring it down a little bit, man. Bring it down a little bit. So like, I'm literally arguing with this guy who has this mental deficiency, and it's like, well, who's the real dumb one here? Like, why am I trying to argue with this guy? Well, just because I want to be right and prideful.
Sometimes you'll get there, man. Like, I think. Like a lot of times we like try to get in discussions, especially like at work, you know? So a lot of the guys that I work with, you know, they're not like church-goey type. So you start talking about whatever it might be, political, theological, whatever the discussion goes to. And there is so the beliefs are so divided. Just there's only, including myself, there's only seven people that work at this feedman. And within the seven, I think there's six different beliefs that are happening here. And it's wow, this is incredible. Because you start having a discussion and it's like a ticking time bomb. You're just waiting for somebody to come through that door and be like, well, that's not what it is. And then here we go. We're like, we start all over. So I liked it because it's been an opportunity to say like, okay, some of these guys are really smart in the law scene. Some of them are more smarter in the theological. It's almost like, why do I believe that? And if I do believe that to this degree and we're to argue over it, like, do I even have a valid point? Now, obviously, I feel like I'm very valid point with Catholicism and, you know, obviously serving Christ and all, you know, in his church and such. But just my other beliefs have also been like challenged. Just like how this, you know, how this guy was able to, your story to take all this time that he had and to develop his own personal philosophy. It's almost been an opportunity for me over the last few years that I've worked here to say, you know, okay, like I've always believed this, but why? And now that I say that I believe this, you know, what am I going to do with that? And how am I going to not only just like have the belief, how do I have the concrete evidence behind the belief? How do I have the that solid nature to say, this is why I believe it, here's why? Because a lot of times you just say like, oh yeah, you know, I believe in that. I believe in God. I'm sure he's there. And it's like, okay, cool. So what else about that? And they're like, I don't know. Never thought about it that far.
That's funny. Frequently have those, like, just last week, pretty relevant topic for me at the moment. I was just like, well, what is worship? I was like, oh, it's like complimenting God. Like, wait a minute, no, I don't work, because you can compliment anybody and like worship belongs to God alone. And so I was just like, what is this thing that I'm supposed to be doing? And I don't even know what it is. Oh,
obviously, all the listeners out there, Chris and I had a wonderful deacon. He was what you would call our Yoda. Holy man. I would say that I'm going to petition for him to be a saint one day after his passing. He would always say that the aspect of worship, obviously, yes, like God is to be worshiped. He's all good and such, but it's almost like God doesn't need us. I mean, he's perfect in himself. And the aspect of worship is almost for us to draw deeper into this more perfect union with him. Because, you know, it's like prayer. I mean, for me, when I don't have a day of like a time set aside for prayer and I don't engage in prayer, my whole day feels different than when I prayed. Yeah. When I prayed, it's like, wow, my life is like, my life feels rightly ordered to the things of today. Like what I need to be doing, the mentality and the lifestyle I should be living. Plus, the almost like that peace that transcends all understanding is there, like in the deepness of your heart. And obviously, I'm human. Some days I get real busy. Other days I'm lazy. And, you know, when I don't have that time, yeah, the whole day is completely, it's like everything's flip-flopped on you. So I love that aspect. Obviously, the deacon said to us just this aspect about worship being, yes, it's a communion with God. Yes, God wants to be worshiped, but it's almost like it's for our good and our salvation that he gives us the opportunity to worship, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah, that's good. I petition we should call him Deacon Law Dog as an anonymous name for him.
He was definitely Deacon Law Dog for sure. He was solid.
Yes. For those of you who don't know, Law Dog is actually a saint, not an actual like televised lawyer trying to get you to hire them because you got in a car wreck. Our deacon really liked this saint because there's nothing known about his life other than an entire community was just like, this guy was awesome. Make him a saint. And that's it. That's all they know.
And he became one.
He's a saint.
And obviously, yeah. So it's like the saint of everyday life. I feel like he should be patron saint of everyday life, just being a good man. You know what? Maybe we should write to the Vatican, tell them we should infer a little bit more on Law Dog and tell them that he should be a saint of everyday life.
I like that.
So yeah, just you know, it's like it's great because it's almost, you know. And then to bring it into Lent, you know, we just entered Lent this last Wednesday.
Yes.
And it's really nice because a lot of time Okay, here's an outside perspective from people who aren't in the church. You know, they think about Lent as the time that people give up chocolate and soda. And, you know, everybody's always asked me, well, what'd you give up for Lent? And, you know, they're not Catholic. And it's like they have this preconceived notion about Lent being this aspect of, okay, you're just going to give up your sodas, or you're going to give up your chocolate, and then you're going to go right back to doing it when Easter's over. But I like the aspect, and even in the church, there's an idea about, you know, obviously it's a penitential season, but so many people take the aspect of Lent, and it's like, it's so easy in today's society to just like take all every bit of information and just like point it back to yourself, and it's always like me. That it's almost beautiful to think that Lent is an opportunity for us to get rid of these things, not for ourselves, but to enter to that worship, be deeper worshipers of Christ, because you have less of these distractions to take you away from this idea of taking a step back from the world, taking all the comforts and what you want, all your opportunities for gluttony, and obviously for any other of your all the seven deadly sins, and just the engage in Christ at the base level, every Lent. It's beautiful to have a season where you can do that, you know?
Yeah. Oh, man. So that was actually what I was going to transition to. Thank you for transitioning us. Let's talk a little bit about the difference between Advent and Lent. What are your thoughts? I have some thoughts. It's okay if you need me to go first.
When I think about Advent, no, I'm not thinking like, obviously, yes, I love Christmas music, but I'm not like thinking Christmas music. But
you mean Advent music?
Yes, Advent music. The biggest thing I get from it is it's almost like I look at them and I associate, obviously we associate them with different times of Jesus' life and different movements. But when I think about Advent, it's like every day I'm not waiting in anticipation of presents. I mean, my family like doesn't even do presents anymore. We give the kids presents, like all my nieces and nephews and my mom and them, you know, grandkids. We just give them presents. And it's all like, oh, that's cool. Look what you got. What they like, they give us like a cup or something, like, or like shirts. But the presents are not even important anymore. But it's like, I'm always like, Advent, I'm always in this anticipation of Christ. It's like, wow. I'm like, I'm thinking about him coming. And it's almost like every day has this level of like, excitement, because it's like, wow, you know, like Christ is coming. And for me, Lent is this time of Christ is here and he's with me. And so instead of me looking forward to his coming and like to him coming to earth to save us and to be this king, it's almost like he's with me and we're on the journey. And we're not to Jerusalem just yet. So, like, that's how I differentiate Lent and Advent, because
I like it.
It's easy to associate the two, you know, it's like a preparatory season.
Yeah. I was having some issue with that. Yeah.
For the celebration, you know, obviously, like Eastertide, we're going to celebrate. There's going to be a major feast. And same thing with Christmas, the Christmastide season. But it's almost like, that's Lent for me in a nutshell, is obviously I'm right here, you know, Christ is with me and we're walking through this desert together. And
So just for those of you who are, you know, audio listeners, I see a vision of Christ right behind him and he just pointed to him, just so you know. The vision is actually just an icon, so don't get too excited.
Yes. But it's okay. Christ is here. We keep him. But I think just that you look in and it's almost like, take me, Lord, take me with you to your journey. Take me with you to Jerusalem.
I like this.
Yeah.
All right. May I get my spiel? Are you done? No, if you have some more to say, say some more, please. Please, please.
I've finished it all.
Okay, so I 100% agree with you on Advent, so I won't go into Advent. I agree with you on Lent as well. So the way that like I interpret Lent is, first of all, with kind of humor, because I'm a humorous person. I'm like, it's get fit time, you know? You've been spiritually fat and lazy all the year. So now it's time to get fit spiritually. Just why we give things up. Because it's like, okay, I recognize I have an attachment to TV and dessert, and I'm getting fat, and I'm not doing the things I need to do. Which is just, you know, not spiritual stuff necessarily, but I got to separate myself from these things. So I'm going to give those things up. Mm-hmm. So it's the getting fit part. On the more serious note, just like you said, like it's Christ being with you. But I specifically associate this time with the 40 days in the desert that Christ spent right after baptism. And it's this time of just sitting in the desert with Christ. So all those things that are cluttering your life, like a podcast, get rid of those useless things.
Not this one. I'll get rid of this one. So
a lot of the clutter in your life. So like one, remove things in your life that are too close to your heart because you don't want anything to become an idol. Two, remove things in your life that are cluttering your life and that are just providing too much noise. So that you can sit in silence and in the desert with Christ to prepare. So at the end of the 40 days of journey with Christ, what happens? He has Satan attack him in intense spiritual combat. And what we're preparing for specifically is 40 days in silence and preparation in the desert and fasting, specific days we must fast. Preparing for Christ's passion and his death and his resurrection. Our goal, or at least my goal during Lent, is always try to create a desert in my life, preparing myself for these most holy days. Looking forward, like knowing it's like, hey, this is not my life forever. You know, I can take on those things in a more healthy way when I'm done with Lent. Or I could just cut some things out completely. But preparing for a specific thing, which are these holy days. And I've had Lents where I was a super slacker because I, you know, just graduated from college, was removed from my community, trying to adjust to adult life. And I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to pray more, but I'm going to create no structure. I'm going to have no plan. So I'm going to just say like a Hail Mary, maybe. So then at the end of Lent, I realized as soon as we hit into Holy Week, and as soon as like, okay, Lent's now over, now it is Holy Week, we're preparing for the death of Christ, we're going through the days where we relive these eternal events, I realized it's like, I wasted it. I wasted this time of preparation, and I can't fully enter into these holy days. So
yeah, that's so important, you know. I feel like, you know, especially so, like, I've been doing the Exodus 90 with a group of guys, and it's almost like, yeah, you know, like, some days you mess up, and you gotta just, like, keep moving forward. But it's like the preparatory season. It's when you celebrate Easter and the victory of Christ. And you did walk with him in the desert. That is so much more beautiful. It's like, it's just like you said, it's almost like the squandering of that time. For me, it's just like that. You know, it's like you take the opportunity to struggle and to suffer. It's like on Fridays and Wednesdays, we're doing Friday and Wednesday fasting on Exodus 90. So it's like, you know, on those days, you're like, oh, wow, I'm so hungry. But it's almost like, wow, if I let this fasting make me a bad person, I'm not entering into the spirit of why we're doing this. Like, if because I'm grumpy because I'm hungry is making me rude to all the people that I work with and interact with every day, then I have missed the point of fasting. I've now just, you've made it about yourself. And so it's like, yes, this time is valuable and so important. The parish that I go to even takes it a step further after the mass. They just, I mean, they should. They eliminate all music. You come in quietly, you leave quietly. The whole season is just about silence and reverence. And you're in the desert. Like, we're not, obviously, yes, when we hold up the gospel, but we do say hallelujah, but we don't sing it. We don't, you know, there's not these major hymns that are happening at the beginning of church. When Easter comes, oh man, the choir is full swing again and everything. And so it's like, it's beautiful to be able to have the parish help you enter into the season by just like showing you, you know, almost like the solemn, you know, how solemn the event is. It's important to us.
Yeah.
It's so important. We must do it every year to prepare ourselves for Easter. Beautiful, beautiful to prepare. Yeah. It's almost like when you have a major event coming, you know, you don't want to just show up in surprise. Like, do you do as well when you're surprised about a major event as when you have time to prepare for it? Course.
Yeah, I really like the note too of just like, yeah, we're taking on these challenges and they're gonna be really uncomfortable, but there's that doesn't give you the excuse to be rude or like make others around you miserable. Remember Deacon Law Dog talking about this. He loves coffee much the same as myself, and he'd try to give it up one year, and it went very poorly. There's a really funny story there. I'm not going to go into it right now, but basically it ended with him with a priest saying like, yeah, have this cup of coffee. He's like, no, I gave it up. He's like, you don't understand. Your wife has told me you need to have a cup of coffee. So he had a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
So I guess that's also to say is like, I think a really good thing to point out too is take stock of yourself during this Lent. If what you chose is too much, like, it's okay to give something else up. That being said, I'm having a most miserable time with Lent, and it's only been 3 days, and I've just been super depressed and just unhappy with not being able to do the things that I want to do. And in like one solid thing I've incorporated in my life is that I don't make others suffer for my Lenten sacrifices. So if like, you know, I give TV, they're watching TV and they want me to be here, I'm just not going to give input to what I want to watch. And like, I'll just be there. And that happened. And when I was watching TV, I realized that on the me watching TV was no longer like, it wasn't like, oh, this is so satisfying. I feel so good. This is, I've been missing this. Me watching TV was actually like, I realized that reason I have these extremely negative feelings is because I, there's something that I'm not necessarily avoiding, but just it was a coping mechanism and attachment. And then it was amplified with the season of Lent and the spiritual warfare that also goes on with that. I realized like, this is not the thing that I've been desiring. Like, I've been desiring to go back and like want to watch TV, but when I was actually watching it with this person, I realized no. Like, this is not the thing I have been desiring. That there's an unsatisfaction in my relationship with God. And I realized just like how little I was talking to God after that. It's like, man, like, I haven't been talking to God a lot lately. I realized like, this dissatisfaction that I have is actually in my life. And like this lacking of participating in God's will and also just being open to him. So like there's twofold aspects of it. There is an aspect of like, I'm taking cold showers and now I'm just dying and my feet are turning blue and I've lost all feeling in my hands now. I don't think this is going to continue to work for the long game. And I'm just rude to everybody I meet. There's also another flip side. I was like, there's going to be some spiritual attack and there is going to be some disorder. If especially you pick something that you're really close to, there's going to be some disorder within your heart and it's going to want you to reprioritize things in the disordered manner that was happening before. So there's a twofold thing of taking stock in your heart there. So there, Philip Neary, talk to us about like how Lent's going for you and how it's been going. I was going to ask you what you gave up, but apparently you gave up joy since you decided to go with Exodus 90.
Yes, I give up a lot of joy. A lot of comfort. Exodus has been tough. It's always tough. Now, I will say this under the approval of my group. So living in a camper, and it's like been 20 here. I kind of told my group, look, I understand that we're doing the cold showers. I'm not trying to be a skimper. You know, I'm not trying to be the guy who's like, well, I'm going to do some of the disciplines. I'm not going to do some of them. No. That's not it. My problem was, is I just not interested in getting frostbite or hypothermia by taking a cold shower. So I told him, I was like, can I at least do a lukewarm on a 20 degree day, you know? And my water is like, my water is 20 degrees because I have a well, but it's not a deep well. So the water is just as cold as it is outside.
It's literally just snowflakes like, coming out of the shower head for him. I mean, water. Yeah, like his body heats it up and then it becomes water.
So it's like, those things have been okay. But for me, I have been focusing the most on the fasting and the food. Like, I hunt, I eat, I cook. That's like, that takes up so much of my time.
Yeah.
And
I'm here.
Hunting, so it's like, because I'm always like, eating, snacking, you know, for being, you know, my size guy, the size of guy that I am, for everybody listening, I'm only like 170 pounds or so, but I eat all the time and a lot, and my metabolism is so fast. Okay, it'll change one day. It ain't changed yet, I'll just say that. And when I got into Exodus, it was like, okay, you're going to eat three meals every day. You're not going to snack in between, and on then you're going to fast on Wednesday, Friday, and not eat meat. Okay, I can avoid the eating meat, but it's the eating in general that I was like, And it's been really good. It's been that has been so challenging, but it has been so rewarding to say, like, I'm going to eat three times, and I'm going to do it right. And then I'm also, whenever I fast, I'm going to think about why I'm fasting, and it's like, one thing I love about Exodus, you made a note of this completely. I mean, obviously you've done Exodus before, but you made this note that take stock of where you're at. And that's what they're always saying in Exodus. Like, get your bearings. Where are you right now? So like, you're constantly like, yeah, where am I at? What am I doing that either needs work or not? Now you can like take the Exodus 90 deal and like take a step back from it and say, you know, if you're just going to do Lent in the regular sense and try to give something up, I like the aspect of giving up one thing good instead of giving up like 1,000 things and being like, I'm not going to do this, and this, and this, and you do them all bad. You give up one thing and you do that well. Like, you know, a really good friend of mine, he wasn't an alcoholic, but he definitely loved to have a beer after work. And he made it a point during his Lent to just completely give up every beer after work. And, you know, when he just didn't have that thing to take the edge off, like that coping mechanism after a stressful day at work, it was no different than he always was. And I thought that was so beautiful that he would, and I know it took some self-discipline to be able to have a different way to engage with Christ and like knock off the edge, but also at the same time, like not to cope. I feel like today's world, we cope with everything. You have a bad day, you cope. You have a stressful season in your life, you cope. And instead of like going to God and saying, okay, God, you know what's happening right now. This is what I should be doing. Help me to do this right. help me to engage with this on all levels that you want me to be involved in. Instead of going to God for control, we all just like reach out, try to grab the anchor, and then try to hold on. And it's like, it just doesn't work. And the coping mechanism doesn't work. Like, the fact of you having control in everything of your life is just insane. And it's not that you got to be this hippie riding the wave, you know, dude, but at the same time, a lot of that stuff you just got to give to God. Say, you know what's going on. Help me handle it. Just give me the grace to handle it. That's my life. There's so much there that there can be opportunities for you to cope and reach out for control. And you just have to step back, say, God, help me out here. So, yeah, man, I understand that a lot.
Yeah, which is why my Lent has been so uncomfortable, is because I chose the things that I was coping with, which is a few things. And I was like, you know what? I'm giving all these up. Again, like the social thing where like, I'm not going to make everybody's burden my burden. I'm just not going to be allow myself to choose it for myself. And it's been, what, 3 days into Lent? And it's been terrible. I've just been
understand
like,
that.
Yeah, just like, God, those flesh pots of Egypt, man, they look so good. Just like, oh yeah, man, sure, I'm just, it's unfortunate too, because I work on a rotation based schedule. So I have so many days on, so many days off. So I like hit Ash Wednesday at work, which was a good thing. I wanted that. I wanted things to do when I'm fasting, because if I'm thinking about food all day and I have nothing to do, I'm going to be very unhappy. Yes. Then Thursday, bam, off of work. Nothing to do except work on the house and the RV. Sorry, house. Just the RV. I don't have a house. So I was like, man, I just want to watch TV. I want to do this, want to do that. And I can't because I gave it up for Lent. Dang it, I hate myself. This is awful. Like, God, I just want to watch something right now. It was that coping mechanism. Yeah. And like I said with you, like, I got to watch a little bit of TV. I was like, oh, you know, it's good, but the proportion of my longing for it and me watching it right now, not the same. And I definitely was searching for it more, fill my time and cope more so than actually just enjoying it for what it is. So I didn't have as healthy of a relationship with it as I really needed to. So it's good. Going good. Doing a whole lot more now that's productive. I'm listening to a lot more content, because like one thing I will do is like, okay, like YouTube videos that are on the faith or just like educational in general, like that's good. That's productive. It's growth. So that's still in the game. So, man, I've watched so many YouTube videos on just spirituality and espresso makers because I find them very fascinating. Maybe we'll make one day. Maybe we'll just modify an espresso maker one day. I like espresso. So,
yeah.
So my Lent has been really tough, really hard. But like I'm realizing that it's really good for me and it's giving me an ability to be more open to God and actually like sit with him and listen with him and talk with him and like clear all the clutter out of my life that was there. So it's good, but it sucks. It's getting better.
Yeah. I understand that a lot. Just like the toughness, being like, some days suck pretty bad. Other days are great. But mostly it seems like the days that are great are the days you get to eat three times. The more you engage on this base level and the more you just contemplate, I feel like the biggest thing just take away from Lent is that you're walking with Christ, obviously, just like you said, through the desert. And just embrace that. Embrace the desert that you're in. And eventually, like, Easter's coming. Easter's coming very soon.
So. That's good. Yeah, man. That's really good. That's really good. Well, I think this has been a wonderful podcast. Thank you, Brother Philip, for joining me today and talking about some good Lenten things and just helping to get the audience to know who you are. Definitely want to have them on the show more often. They don't always have to be like this hour-long format. We can have them shorter if needed, but I always enjoy talking to you, so it easily gets to an hour.
I mean, it seems like every phone conversation that we have, I mean, whether we're on the podcast or whether we're just talking in general, it's like, hey, let's talk a little bit more. And then next thing you know, an hour and a half has gone by, which
Yeah, this could
seems
easily
like
turn
we've
into
about
more.
reached that
Yeah.
again.
But
For
I'm
sure,
also
but
going.
we.
Sorry, you go.
Oh, I just was going to say that we'll give whoever's listening a break, and we'll give them a little chance to go do something else with their life.
Nice. Yeah, so I'm actually late to meet some other friends, but it's all right. perpetually late.
Yeah, I
Alrighty,
understand
brother.
that. All right, my
Well,
friend.
thank you guys. Yeah, if you know if you're watching listening to this on YouTube, like the subscribe button does help quite a bit, so please hit that. If you enjoy that, please tell your friends because growing the podcast is going to make it more long term sustainable because I've gotten to the point where I'm starting to pay for a lot of things now and it's all coming out of pocket. So if we get some more listeners, that'd be very much appreciated. So thank you guys.